So we are ready to start our second day. As you know, you have your program in front of you. Today we are continuing the session, and we're beginning by reports by young scientists which were delivered as posters at the PAC meetings. And we all know that our future is in our young scientists. So the first speaker is Daniel Yantsetov. That's the, I understand, the theoretical physics laboratory. Investigation of exotic states in light nuclei. So Daniel, we invite you to the podium, and would you please give us your talk?
Good morning, dear members of Scientist Council. It's a great honor for me to present my report at Scientist Council of GNI. Today, I would like to talk about some exotic state in light nuclei. This work was done in collaboration with Institute of Nuclear Physics in Kazakhstan and the Kurchatov Institute in Moscow. Until now, the neutron halo has been observed almost exclusively in the ground states of some radioactive nuclei. Thus, stable nuclei have exotic properties. Carbon-13 nucleus is a good example of a normal nuclei, which we'll describe it in framework of shell model. What about a neutron halo? The halo is most likely to be detected in nuclear states in which the valence neutron occupies an S orbit. For example, in carbon-13 and beryllium-9, such states are known near neutron threshold. In carbon-13, this is a first state, and in beryllium-9, it's 1.68 MeV. What is known about the neutron halo? We know three types of neutron halo in which neutron is an S state. For example, in discrete spectrum, this is a beryllium 11. This is a famous work of Tanihata. In excited state, this is carbon 13. There are several theoretical works in which talk about increased radius of the excited state in carbon-13. And in continuum, there is a beryllium-9. In addition to the neutron halo, carbon-13 is interesting with the existence of the Hoyle state analog, which is possible in its structure. For the nuclei, a pronounced out cluster structure, the shell model doesn't reflect a number of their characteristic features. For example, in this work, Milena and von Erzene, it's assumed that a similar Hoyle state can be detected in the some neighboring nuclei. In boron 11, this state, and 8.56 MeV, and in carbon 13, 8.68 MeV. To answer the interested question whether such exotic state exists in a stable nuclei, a series of experiments were carried out in our international collaboration with scientists from Kurchatov Institute and University of Jyväskylä. Experiments were carried out on the cyclotrons in Kazakhstan and in Finland at energies of accelerated alpha particles at 29 and 65 MeV. The obtained experimental data were calculated within framework of some theoretical models. Data on inelastic scattering calculated within the framework of optic model, and the inelastic scattering we calculated with framework of coupled channel method and the destroyed wave Born approximation. There are two types of uncertainties of in determining the parameters of optical potential, linear and the discrete. To eliminate linear and discrete uncertainties of optical parameters, the radius of real and the imaginary parts are fixed, was fixed at these values. The adjustment of the experimental data with theory was carried out by variation for other four parameters. In the following slides, show the results of comparing with experimental data of elastic scattering with theoretical calculation. On this slide, it's shown the literature data at 26 and 35 MeV, at 48 and 54 MeV, and this is our results. In this slide, you can show the data of elastic scattering with theoretical calculation at 29 and 65 MeV. The adequacy of the potentials obtained parameters of optical potentials was tested by the experimental data of inelastic scattering. As mentioned above, the experimental inelastic scattering were calculated by the coupled channel method in this third excited state. Additionally, the deformation parameters of excited state were found. We claim that the obtained parameters, obtained optical potential parameters in elastic scattering are physically justified because they describe very well the inelastic scattering too. For measurement of nuclear radii in short-lived excited state, recently direct methods have been proposed and developed. They are asymptotic normalization coefficient, modification diffraction model, and inelastic nuclear rainbow scattering. All our calculation were carried out within the framework of modification diffraction model. This model assumes that the root mean square radii of excited state can be determined through the difference of the diffraction radii of excited and the ground state from this formula. As I noted above, the first excited state in carbon 13 should have an increased radius. The theoretical calculation in this case are performed within the framework double destroyed wave Born approximation. There is a rule of Blair fuzz. According of this rule, the angular distribution of elastic and inelastic scattering should coincide in fuzz. If you see a shift, in the fuzz of inelastic scattering with respect to inelastic scattering, closer to initial degrees, this indicates a possible increase in the diffraction radius. Indeed, the calculation made with the framework of MDM show that the first excited state has an increased radius in comparison with the ground state. In this table, you can show that the RMS radius of first excited states are larger than the ground state radius. What about analogies of Hoyle state in carbon 13? Observation of the exotic structure and the anomalously large radius of the Hoyle state in carbon 12 prompted a number of assumptions that a similar situation can occur in neighboring nuclei. In this table, you can see the RMS radius of 8 and 86 MeV excited state. The RMS radius are similar with the radius of Hoyle state. If you look at behavior, an elastic differential cross section, inelastic differential cross section of Hoyle state with comparison with the excited state 8 and 86 MeV, they are similar. Summarizing, we can say the similarity of the RMS radius of 8.86 MeV and Hoyle state, observed shift of early minimum position in these nuclei, confirms the conclusion that these states have much in common, and we certainly, these levels, could call it analogous of each other. We also found the third excited state, and called it a super compact state. Carbon-13 nuclei seems to be unique in the sense that the several different structures so exist in its spectrum. In addition to the usual levels of the shell model, there are two diluted states, for example, a neutron halo and an analog of Hoyle state. As mentioned above, according to the rules of Blair phases, the angular distribution of elastic and inelastic scattering should coincide in phase. In the first two cases, we can show it. But in the this excited state, 9.90 MeV, the inelastic scattering with respect to elastic scattering is located in the direction of a large angles. This indicates a possible reduced diffraction radius. Indeed, we can say the calculation with made MDM model confirmed this. The RMS radius of this state are smaller than the ground, the RMS radius of ground state. In this table, we show the results of the results obtained from within MDM to comparison of received results with other methods, inelastic nuclear rainbow scattering and asymptotic normalization coefficient, the results are similar. In conclusion, the radius of the excited states levels in carbon 12 are calculated, which predicted in some theoretical works. And we say about a supercompact excited state in carbon 13. The several different structure so exist in carbon 13 spectrum. And we show the uniqueness of stable carbon 13. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for this nice presentation. Questions from the committee? Any questions? First you and then Krzysztof.
The excitement of the nuclei carbon 13. Mm-hmm. Makes the radius twice larger compared to the ground state. And that means that only one additional neutron makes the nuclei twice larger. Is it correct?
We predict this. Maybe in this case, we predict that we have a core of carbon 12, and a neutron is a destination of this core. So, because of in this state, we have a large RMS radius. Yes.
Okay. Christoph Rusek, yeah. Yeah, the question. Anybody else with a question?
So you performed an elastic scattering experiment at many different energies, and you looked at the excited states of carbon 13.
Mm-hmm.
You analyzed your results using two different methods, GWBA and coupled channels. The method of coupled channel is more microscopic than GWBA. So
yes.
Could you please explain why you didn't use the method of coupled channel for all these states that you observed? Why you use the GWBA?
We calculated a sum excited state because we haven't the enough energy resolution. And we found only this state, and we calculated only this state in a coupled channel method. The other state we can not observe because we haven't a good energy resolution in our experiments.
Any further questions? Okay.
Very interesting. I would like to know if this phenomenon takes place only for the light nuclei, or it is possible to study also for heavier nuclei. There is a limit between the light and the heavy for this phenomenon. And where it is this limit?
It's maybe seems it is a large nucleus, but our group is study only light nuclei. And for example, we can observe this phenomena, for example, a Hoyle-Stead in beryllium. In boron 11, in 8 and 56 MeV, for example. And in other heavy nuclei, maybe. I don't know.
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay, well, we thank you again for this nice presentation.
Thank you.
And now we change gears. We now move to biology. It's neurochemical alterations in central nervous system of rodents after exposure to different radiation modalities. And the speaker is Ksenia Bielokopitova. That's the laboratory of radiobiology here, local, I think. Yes. Ksenia, go ahead.
Dear members of the Scientific Council, dear colleagues, let me present my talk, which is focused on the study of neurochemical alterations in red brains after exposure to different radiation modalities. This study referred to the problem of radiation damage to the central nervous system. Why this study is of great interest in present days? This problem of radiation damage to the central nervous system is important for cranial radiotherapy, when the different parts of the brain are exposed to medical beams. These medical beams, in this case, we need to know and we need to predict possible side effects of this exposure. It means that we need to know how different brain structures react on the radiation. And second point, why this study is important is connected with the problems of so-called space radiobiology, when we need to predict radiophysiology effects of space radiation in astronauts. What we know about radiation damage to the central nervous system? There are a number of neurological alterations that are revealed in last years in ground-based experiments. We know about learning and memory disability, about locomotor damage and cognitive impairments and other. However, to date, the molecular mechanism underlying all these changes, as well as the most relevant brain structures responsible for the observed disorders, haven't been clearly identified. In this regard, the aim of this study was to contribute to clarify neurochemical effects of ionizing radiation and to evaluate differences in neurochemical response of red brains to radiation with protons and carbon ions by investigation parameters of monoamine metabolism. As testing model, we use young rats to study these effects. Next slide show us experiment design. Since we perform a comparative analysis between two types of radiation, we used first accelerated carbon ions produced by a nucleotron facility of Wechsler Baldwin Laboratory of High Energy Physics, and second protons available at Fazotron of facility of Gelepov Laboratory of Nuclear Problems. This is a medical beam which is currently used for treatment of patients. We exposed all the red at the same dose of 1 gray and then made neurochemical tests at 24, 30 and 90 days after radiation. It means that longest gap between two tests was 2 months. At this slide you may see a sketch that demonstrates us a full procedure of neurochemical study. What we did, we made dissection of the brain and then extracted five brain structures, namely hippocampus, prefrontal cortex, striatum, nucleus accumbens. We know that these brain structures are associated with many cognitive functions, emotions, and motivation states of animals. After rapid freezing of this brain structure in liquid nitrogen, we use high-performance liquid chromatography to evaluate concentrations of monoamine and their metabolites in tissue of these brain structures. With this technique, we measured concentrations of following substances, noradrenaline, dopamine, and serotonin, and a couple of their products of their metabolites. I want to show you the most important results of our study. What we did, we obtained an overall map of neurochemical alteration in the brain. In this map, we show that a more sensitive brain regions where we see neurochemical changes. We found in most of the cases protons and carbon ions affected near the same brain structures. There are just a couple of protons and carbon ions observed at 24 and 90 days after irradiation. I would like to illustrate a difference with a couple of the slides. In the prefrontal cortex exposure to protons, we observed overall increase in four indices, which are mentioned in this slide. At the same time, exposure to carbon ice induces an overall decrease in several of them, of these indices. There was particularly in neurotransmitters, in some neurotransmitters. Here's a couple of additional illustration between differences between protons and carbon ions. Very interesting results were observed in hippocampus and hypothalamus. Exposure to protons just see alterations in particular indices, only in one of them. On the other hand, exposure to carbon ions were observed overall decrease in more metabolic indices. In hippocampus, we see a similar situation at least 24 hours after exposure. And while carbon ions induce an overall decrease in hippocampal monoamine metabolism. So how we can to summarize our results? And again, for the other period of time, we see more pronounced alterations of protons compared to carbon ions. And that was different between radiation, between affected radiation modalities. So how we can summarize our results? In summary, the reported findings suggest that there are a difference between neurotransmitters' metabolism alterations induced by protons and carbon ions. It is shown that in most of the brain structures, proton irradiation impair only particular metabolic indices, while exposure to carbon ions leads to an overall change in the monoamine metabolism process. It suggested that proton radiation induced permanent impairment of brain function starting from mid-term period of about 30 days, unlike exposure to carbon ions, leads presumably to late effects, firstly detected at 90 days after radiation. The presence of neurochemical alteration after protons radiation and absence of them following the exposure to carbon ions particles is likely caused by hyperactivation of feedback mechanisms by heavy ions that blue metabolic deviations. In the practical meanings, we follow first. The reported observation are important for prediction of possible side effects of the brain radiotherapy, where the data on the reaction of particular brain structure under radiation should consequently be taken into account. Second, in the deep space travel, different five phases imply exposure of a crew to different radiation modalities. And third, considering the reported date, this fact may additionally contribute to variability of the astronaut CNS state together with the other strong space travel factors. And now I would like to present you a list of our recent publications in the field. And thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Paper's open for discussion now. I have a question. I noticed that you had very different dose rates for the carbons and the protons. The protons were delivered at a dose rate of about one gray per minute, and the carbon dose rate was two orders of magnitude less. It was 0.03 gray per minute, right? Would that, I mean, how would you comment on the early and late effects in the context of the very large differences in the dose rate?
I'm understanding your questions. The early and late effects were observed different in the different indices of these alterations. And
I understand there were different machines, so I understand the reasons for the different dose rates. But should the experiment be done at roughly the same dose rate for the two ions? Could it be that the protons, you'd see, you know, different, as they say, distribution of early and late effects because of the dose rate difference? Could it be?
It couldn't be because we at now can't detect only a result which we obtained at now, and this depends at dose and other parameters of
because I would suggest that you try to decrease the dose rate for the protons, which shouldn't be too difficult to compare, because you have different LETs, but with the dose rate is also an important factor in these studies. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Questions, yeah? Please.
Of course, it would be very interesting to see such effects on humans, but you cannot use them like you use the rats. Of course, but there is another possibility. Many people went in cosmos around the Earth. They were exposed even longer than you exposed the rats. Now there are some non-invasive methods of studying the brain. In the past or in the present, were such experiments, such measurements, non-invasive ones, done on the cosmonauts? Did they manifest some deviations from the brain functions after going, for example, 1 year around the Earth? There are some cases. It would be interesting to study this problem too, maybe.
May I offer a comment on this? Of course, you're absolutely right that there's many other non-invasive techniques. I understand that the choice of the metabolites here was related to the different ways the brain acts. So this is why such, the dopamine and all those elements were chosen, right? So what you're saying is that perhaps on the same mice, there's some tests which could be done, like, you know, orientation tests, tests which are which show the way the brain activity changes the behavior of the animal, but that's a different study. I think that you are performing such studies as well, are you? Like trying to, you know, to find the way rats find their way out of mazes and such stuff.
Yes, we try to find a new way in our experiments and to try answers of these questions. And we try to make it in experiments in future.
Yeah, but of course this is not the part of this presentation, right? Yeah. Any other questions?
Generally speaking, of course, the problem presents presents a great interest for the flight to the Mars, on which on discuss very much about that, and about a long exposure far from the Earth. You see, even maybe of that we cannot hear anything about the Americans to go to Mars. You see, Obama wanted to imitate the former President Kennedy and to order a kind of American on moon. And they stopped even to discuss about that. Maybe the reason is even this reason, you see.
Well, as far as I know, this is an issue, but the Mars program is underway. So, I mean, part of the program is a big study on the health effects and the neuro effects are part of that study. I know personally people who are engaged in that program at NASA. So it's not that the program is stopped. The program is continuing, and there's a research on those aspects which were so nicely presented here. So this is an ongoing exercise. Any other comments? Please.
Maybe it is possible to have some information about this using computer simulation, because we know that these reactions could be simulated. For example, it was shown this Quinta, Buran, this is our very large target where the reactions could be simulated, and to know how many neutrons are in the target and so on. So my question, is it possible to do this computer simulation, this process?
I don't hear, sorry, the questions.
The point is that you had, say, when discussing this experiment, when designing this experiment, you could possibly mimic similar responses in your chemistry by using other stimulants than radiation. I mean, that's the essence of the question, I understand, yes? But okay, I mean, it's a general discussion now. Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much once again for the presentation. And the good news is that we are invited to coffee now, because unfortunately we will not have the third presentation as planned. The TUS space experiment will not be presented. So coffee, and we meet at 5:30? So how about if we meet at 5:30, yeah? 10:30. It'll
be 15:30.
Yeah, but could we, let's see. Because we have the award. So we meet at 10:40, yes? No, 10.
10:50.
10:11. Yeah. So it'll 10:50. Be 10. We reconvene at 10:50. 10:11. Okay. Thank you.
10:11. So.
Yeah.